And I believe we are now live.
Nice. So should we talk about how we are live? Like, what's different than how we would have been live before?
Absolutely. Many months ago, you and I were both invited on a web stream for the Brazilian Wi-Fi Mobility Day.
Yeah.
Do you remember?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And was that on StreamYard?
Yeah. So they were using StreamYard, and I thought the platform was pretty interesting. So
yeah,
I've played around with it a little bit, and I thought we could give it a try for recording this episode of Hidden Node Podcast.
Yeah, and I think that's a great idea. And I've also used it a couple times in like the vintage Mac community.
Okay.
There's a few people that do podcasts and live streams and things like that, and they use StreamYard. So what do you think the main advantages of using StreamYard over like doing the separate recordings and splicing it together in posts? Like, what do you think the main advantages are going to be?
I mean, I think for us, the most important feature that I'm interested by is workflow minimization, trying to keep this as streamlined as possible. I feel like we've both at different points in the process so far fallen into a trap of, because we do naturally want to make the audio quality as good as possible. And then we want to do an edit, which is good. But for me, I know I've binned a couple of episodes, and I think you've binned a couple of episodes, because we've wanted to put time in on the edit, and then it, you know, once 2 weeks pass, then you're like, I really don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah. It's like the relevance of the conversation kind of like drifts away, and it's just really difficult to sit down and spend that 2 hours to do the edit and then give it a listen through of 45 minutes to an hour of material. It's just so much. So
yeah.
I'm excited about this. I'm excited to see how it goes. I hope it's smooth. Maybe people will enjoy the video content format as well. They can kind of see where we produce these.
Yeah.
Yeah. It should be fun.
We'll give that one a try. So, we're going to record. We're going to record using StreamYard, and we'll probably post the video on YouTube. And in the future, maybe we'll also live stream when we do the recording to YouTube, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I think if a few people joined us for the live stream, that could be kind of fun. If not, then I'm fine with that too.
Yeah.
Either way, it ends up on YouTube, it ends up in your podcast app. Ta-da! So, yeah, well, with that said, should we jump right in and kind of hit our list of things that we want to talk about, the first of which being your headphones? What's going on with your headphones, Nick?
We've spoken about what brand and model of headphones we use in the past. But one thing that I was recently reminded about how much I like the Bose headphones is that when the ear pads eventually break, which they seem to do after, let's see, this is like 4 or 5 years, but they're easily replaceable. And I think that's really great. So basically the ear pads on my Bose QC35 version 2s died, and like they kind of burst on the inside. Have you seen it?
No. I've had them break down, but I've never, but on the Bose specifically, no. Like, I have a pair of Audio Technicas that they totally broke down on, but yeah, what
exactly
happened on
that.
Yours?
Just the fake leathery plastic breaks down, and then it starts leaving black bits on your face after you've worn them, and then eventually they all rupture. And on the Bose ones specifically, they rupture on the inside, and then you kind of see all the foam. And I purchased some replacement ones that are not black, which I thought was, I guess it's kind of like cow print.
They're very cow print. Question for you. Did you guys have Gateway computers in the UK?
Yes, we did.
They, for anyone that's listening to this and doesn't have video, it looks like you have Gateway 2000
Gateway
branded,
right.
Yeah, headphones. So it's very bold of you.
Thank you.
Speaking of headphones, if we're good on the the ear cuffs and all that,
nothing else to say.
Did you see that Sony's got the new? Are they XM5s or whatever? They've got new headphones out.
Okay,
have you seen these yet?
I haven't.
Go give them a look, and I'd be curious to see what you think. I mean, you don't have to look right now if you don't want to, but I know that in the past we talked about the QC35s, we talk about the Sony XM3s, which is what I have, and the XM4s, which look identical.
Yeah.
What do you think of the 1000 XM5s?
I mean, they much like the latest version of the Bose. Did you see what Bose released after these?
No. What's the model number? Do you remember Bose off the top of your head?
No, I don't, but I'll find it.
Noise I didn't remember the headphones. Sony's either, if it's any consolation.
I think they're called the noise canceling headphones 700.
Okay. Let's take a look here. Oh yeah.
It's the same It's the same weirdness, isn't it?
Yeah.
As the Sony just, things.
Yeah.
And no, I don't like the I don't like the aesthetic of either of those.
Yeah, neither. At this point, like, I would be hunting down a pair if I wanted to upgrade my XM3s to something newer. I would be hunting down a pair of XM4s. That's what I would be doing, because I don't think that the Bose noise-canceling 700s or the XM5s are good-looking headphones. I like that these kind of look like a classic studio headphone. I value that. It's vain and it's stupid, I know, but that's what I want. So
the thing I find, though, now with... I'm using these less and less.
Really?
I mean, meetings, I'm tending to use AirPods or...
Yeah.
Now that I've got a studio display, the speakers and the mic inside that are sufficient. So it's not amazing. And I think the audio is often better with AirPods in. But, you know, your ears get fatigued when you've been wearing AirPods for 6 hours and on the trot. So,
yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I think these are really the Sony's are good for airplane journeys, unless you're trying to sleep, in which case they're terrible.
They're terrible because then you have giant things on your ears. Yeah, on the ear fatigue thing during meetings, like this morning. So here's kind of my flow chart for how I do which headphones or what I end up using on video calls and things like that. If it is a Teams call, I have to use my AirPods because Teams automatically adjusts your microphone gain no matter what. There's no way to turn that off that I have found.
Okay.
And on my Blue Yeti Nano, it cranks the gain up super high and it sounds terrible and it just does not work. Zoom, on the other hand, I have pretty good luck with that. And so I'm able to use my headphones and my Blue Yeti Nano for Zoom. And then there's a few other outliers that I couldn't tell you the specifics about off the top of my head. Like GoToMeeting, I think, is fine with the Yeti Nano. I think Cisco WebEx is fine. But I end up using my AirPods Pro for Teams, and a lot of my calls end up being on Teams these days. Mm-hmm. But then the other thing that happens is, like, today I had 3 hours straight of calls this morning, first thing. And my AirPods started to run out of juice, and so they weren't quite getting me through the day. So, yeah, I'm kind of like... I usually it's not a problem, but sometimes it is. And I just don't have like a one, you know, size good. Like there's no one this size, like fits all solution.
You know, the solution.
I end up bouncing around.
What's that? Have two pairs of AirPods.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Which you did for like, didn't you have like four pairs of AirPods? You probably still do.
At one point I had four. I no longer have four pairs. I'm down to two.
Wow. How'd you manage that? You didn't like lose them, did you?
No. What I found was I didn't like... Ah, I know why I switched. Because once the version 3s came out, I couldn't cope with swapping between V1s and V3s. Or like the initial design AirPod and the second design, which was the third generation. Because, you know, one of them has a tap and one of them has a squeeze.
Yeah.
And I couldn't cope with tapping them incorrectly or squeezing them incorrectly. So I had to purge all of the first design.
Yeah. Models. But probably not a bad idea since the batteries do degrade over time. And it's one of those things. I think it's a good idea to keep your AirPods freshened up. Keep fairly recent ones.
The version 2 AirPods, so that's the first design, they started developing this weird problem where the microphone would like duck and then come back up again. So really weird. I tried taking them to Apple and get them checked, and they passed every test that they threw at them. So there was apparently nothing wrong with them, but repeatedly on calls with my dad, we would have like, you'd be talking and then suddenly, and then you'd come back again. Like, and you weren't doing anything. It definitely wasn't a physical issue. Anyway,
yeah.
Hey, so I now own AirPod Pros, the first version, and one pair of AirPod version 3s, and they both have nice. The same clicky.
Yes, which
squeeze to click.
The same input mechanism is really important, so that way it's not more mental tax and stuff. Yeah. And before we jump into our main subject, did you have something you wanted to finish up before?
I just wanted to say, though, I am looking forward to the volume adjustment coming to, like, the version 4s or whatever it is, because you know that the second generation AirPod Pros, they have volume adjustment on the stem.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you're not going to jump on those. You're waiting until like the next one down the line.
I would rather have. I don't need a new pair. I've got AirPod Pros and AirPods, and that suits me great. But I look forward to being able to do volume adjustments on them.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that as well. Speaking of new AirPods, I also, before we get into our main subject of today's recording, which we do have a main subject coming up eventually.
Maybe.
Maybe. We'll see how it goes. It's always like that. So my AirPods Pro were having some issues. They were the first generation ones. Did I tell you about that? I don't remember.
Yeah, no, well, I remember they had the grumble, like growling.
They would squeal. When there was a lot of ambient noise, like the airplane taking off, they would squeal. If I pushed them into my ears, they would squeal. But the biggest problem I had is during voice calls on my iPhone 12 mini, they would get choppy and weird. So my brother-in-law told me, he was like, hey, there was a recall on a bunch of those. You should take them into the Apple store and see what they'll do. And I took them in, and of course, the Genius Bar guy, he like, you know, factory reset them once, and then is like, is that better? I was like, I don't know. Like, I can't reproduce the problem here. And he was like, let me take them back and put them in the test fixture. So I guess they have a test fixture at the Apple store. It sounds like you may have had a similar experience.
I didn't see it.
Neither did I. No. He whisked them away and came back out with two AirPods Pro and said, hey, both of yours failed. So I guess there was a recall or something like that. And so it's not a different case, same charging case, but new AirPods.
But fresh.
Yeah.
Fresh V1s.
Fresh V1 Pros, correct. And new tips and everything, like full set of new tips and all that. And it seems to have fixed the squealing issue as far as I can tell. I've only had a couple flights since then, so I'm not really sure. But unfortunately, it did not fix the chatteriness, the occasional chatteriness during voice calls, which is so frustrating because like that's the number one reason I bought AirPods. And I love my AirPods V2s because I use them on the phone all the time. I hate talking the phone. I hate pressing my phone up to my ear. I like to keep my hands busy on the phone because I hate being on the phone. So that's still kind of disappointing that I'm still having that. But at this point, I think it's the iPhone's fault.
Okay.
I don't think it's the AirPods. I think it's the iPhone. So, and that, I don't know what I'm going to do about that. So.
Bye.
Probably. Buy another V3s. iPhone.
Yeah, buy another iPhone.
And tangentially.
Hang on. Before we do that tangent, because we're still on air. We're still on at the Apple store for a moment.
Okay.
You've reminded me of a story about my HomePods, which started giving me weird problems where they would kind of pop. Did I tell you about this one? Anyway, my HomePods were giving me this weird problem. So we went to the Apple store and they looked at them, and one of them was able to be replaced and the other two weren't, and blah, 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 blah. Anyway, and all of that's actually been fixed now, I think, with software. So the unit that I returned was probably fine because the other two have stopped doing that. Anyway, but we went to the Apple store, and I had baby Willow with me, with Roz and my dad. And I can't remember who, but we basically were invite, like one of the Apple store people were like, if you need to use the washroom, like you're welcome to. And so Roz, I think Roz went, you know, through the silver door the back. Right. And so when Roz was coming back, I was like, oh my goodness. I mean, I bet it's, you know, it's going to be like the eye toilet, or it's going to be like incredible back there. It's got to be, right? And so I was like, well, can I go to the bathroom as well? I need to go to the toilet. I need to go and have a look. And, it was incredibly disappointing because just like it was just like any just as you would imagine, you're in like a supermarket when you see, when you catch a glimpse behind the folding door and it's just grotty and gnarly back behind the same thing the at back the Apple of the store. House. Like the Apple store, I mean it wasn't grotty yet, actually. It was clean and nice, but it wasn't it wasn't a continuation of the clean store aesthetic into the corridor. Yes. It was regular service corridor. And the toilet and baby changing facility was completely bog standard, what you would imagine. Nothing fancy going on there, which I thought was I wasn't really expecting anything different, but it would have been a really fantastic story if it had been, you know, bespoke design.
I agree that would have been cool, but I'm kind of with you that I had you not told me about this, and if somebody just asked me, what do you think the back of the Apple store is like? I would have been like, it's just standard everything. It's like wire rack shelving and, you know, cinder block walls back there. Like, it's probably just not cool. But
I mean, I guess the environment, the kind of like working space that they actually do work on iPhones and test AirPods and things like that, it's probably like maybe not clean room, but that's probably nice. That's probably a curated environment a little bit more so than the corridor, but
sure.
Anyway,
fun aside, and I'm slightly disappointed, but also unsurprised at the same time. So cool. Well, you know, one tangent we could go down is, you know, should Joel buy an iPhone 13 mini or not? I will give a quick update on that. Let's not get all the way into it for the sake of time. I think it is. I would like to give a small update around that, though. My wife's 2020 iPhone SE, the battery on it was getting pretty weak. I mean, she was not making it through the morning on her 2020 SE. Yeah, it was bad. Like, even if she wasn't doing anything battery intensive on it, like, you know, even just some like lightweight text messaging and things like that, the battery was running out. So I was headed out for a business trip and we were near the Apple store. She was dropping me off at the airport and I was like, why don't you go down to the Apple store and see if they've got a 13 mini in stock? And she did, and they did. And so she has a 13 mini now. So this actually is the first time in our entire 13 years of marriage that she has had a newer phone or a nicer phone than me. Mm-hmm. We have had a few times when we had the same phone, but I don't know. I feel like this should have happened a long time ago that she had the opportunity to have the nice shiny new phone and she loves it. The battery's great. I don't like the aesthetic of it quite as much. It's not white like the 12 mini is. It's a slightly more cream colored or pearl kind of color. And I just don't like where the earpiece is located. It's just not quite as clean looking to me. Mm-hmm. And also the official Apple case that she got for it, it sticks out around the camera about a millimeter or half a mil. Whereas on mine, it's very much flush when it's in the case. So,
okay.
I don't know. It's not a slam dunk. Like the 13 mini is not a slam dunk. So I'm thinking about it, you know, I mean, obviously we're well into 14 territory now and the 15 is on the horizon. I think at this point, I think I'm going to run the 12 mini until I am dangerously close to the 13 mini no longer being available for sale. I think that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So
I guess I'm in the same boat, actually.
Are you?
I mean, there's nothing wrong with my 12, but I don't want to lose the chance to get an Apple. I don't want to miss the chance to get a 13 mini from Apple before they stop selling it, because I'm guessing there'll be definitely a window of time when there's no mini, potentially no small. Although maybe the SE4 is going to be mini-esque, but it doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, if they introduce an SE4 or like an SE 2024, that use the 13 mini tooling and everything, like, bam, I'm in. That's great. That's exactly what I want. But then there's been the rumor mill that Apple has shut down the SE development entirely. Yep.
Yeah.
And it's just, for those of us that like small phones, things are sketchy right now. It's just, there's no clear path forward again. So,
and at the moment, it doesn't matter so much. Like the 12 and the 13 are both completely fine. for me, the 12 is fine. I think the 13's got a good few years in it being viable. So I don't know, the landscape's better than it was. It's a lot better than it was before the 12 mini came out, right? That was that was rough.
That was rough. There was nothing. And so now, like, all hope is not lost, but the future is not guaranteed. It's kind of where we're at right now. So cool. Should we move on to our the main thing that we wanted to talk about, which is Prusa Link for the Prusa Mark 3S series of printers, I think. Mark 3 series. Yeah.
So I think it's worth mentioning here. So when I I took cues from you about getting involved with 3D printing, and you kind of suggested the Prusa Mini, and that was the correct first printer for me. But when I got that, you know, I think we spoke a little bit about Octoprint, and you had said you played with it a little bit, but it wasn't you had installed it, but then uninstalled it, and you preferred just. Do you want to talk about that just a tiny bit about about Octoprint?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That really goes back to the olden days of 3D printing. So I got into 3D printing in about 2012 is when I got my first printer up and running. And at first, like, the only way to print was to plug it into your computer and run a Pronterface and stream everything to your printer, stream the G-code to your printer from your computer. And I remember a couple times, like, plugging in my iPod. Remember when those were a thing? I'd like plug in my iPod to my computer and the print would stop. That sucked. So then, yeah, not great. You could print off an SD card, but you basically like put a G code file on the SD card and put in the SD card and turned the printer on, and it would just look for the only file on there and start printing. Very, very archaic by today's standards. It's funny, the hardware was all the same, but we just have such better firmware now. And there was no screens or controls or anything back then either. So Octoprint was like the way to get controls on your printer and the way to detach it from your laptop, which, like, at the time I had a little netbook and that's all I had. My little Asus 1005 HA was like that. That was my computer. Okay. And so, you know, Octoprint freed me from that. But then you kind of move into like the modern times. And like on the Mark 3S, you have a screen, you have file management built in, you can start, stop, pause, it's printing off an SD card, there's no computer involved. And the same with the Prusa Mini to an even better degree, where the user interface on the Mini is really, really good. So I just felt like the need and the complexity of Octoprint was just no longer necessary with Prusa's machines. The one thing you lost, though, is the ability to upload G-code over a network. So you're shuffling around SD cards. You're shuffling around, in the case of the Mini, you're shuffling around thumb drives.
Yeah.
So that, I feel like, is where Prusa Link comes in. So
yeah. And so I kind of took cues from you on this one. And I looked at Octoprint, and it looked as though there was lots. It was basically too much going on. You could do anything.
Anything.
But the overabundance of options kind of put me off a little bit, and the fact that you weren't messing around with it kind of said, you know, I wasn't too fussed about exploring it. But then in the background there was this talk of, you know, well, is Prusa going to release their print farm software? And then in 2022 at WLPC Prague, we went to the You weren't in yet, but we went to the Prusa factory, and during the tour, I think I asked the question, or it came up naturally in the conversation with our guide, and he said, "Oh no, it's out. It's out now." I was like, "What? When?" And he said, "Oh no, it's out, but it's not kind of public yet. It's still it's an open beta, so you have to kind of find it, and they're not publicizing it greatly, but." Yeah, it's out. And this was really good this was really important to me, because in the run up to WLPC, I had been running three i3s, not 24 hours a day, but 12, 13 hours a day in order to print all of the cases for the WLAN Pi M4 so that we could do the deep dive. And so I was juggling SD cards. And obviously that's bad at the beginning, because once you get it down, once you've got a slice that works on each printer then they kind of like settle down and you're not doing it all. But nevertheless, you're still disconnected. And every time you do anything, you want to just tweak, oh, I'll just change one setting. I'll just try this. And you have to pop the SD card out, put it into the laptop. And then you slice it again and then you save it and then you put it back on there. Anyway, and so Prusa Link in release candidate one, I think. I think I downloaded version 0.6. I don't even know what the version was. Anyway, I downloaded Prusa Link and put that on a Raspberry Pi. And this is actually, again, something worth exploring. It was Boardman who told me he didn't want to do the Raspberry Pi
Zero
inside the case.
Yeah.
He just used a Raspberry Pi 4 over the USB cable.
Yeah. And can we talk about that for just a second?
Yes,
and just clarify on what that means.
Yeah.
So Prusa Link is basically, for all intents and purposes, it's a Linux distro, stick it on an SD card, whack it into your WLAN Pi, and connect your WLAN Pi, crossing projects.
Well, I mean,
plug into your Raspberry Pi. You could run it from a WLAN Pi if you want,
you could.
But plug it into your Raspberry Pi and then connect the Raspberry Pi to your Prusa printer in some way. Now you have integration with Prusa Connect, which is their cloud service. You can send G-code directly over to the machine over your local network from Prusa Slicer. You can do all this stuff, right? Really a lot of things that you could do with Octoprint before, but it's just all nicely, tightly integrated. It only does a few things. It does the few things really well.
Yeah.
The connection part is really important because you can use any WLAN Pi over USB.
Raspberry Pi.
There you go again.
I mean, you could use a WLAN Pi. It's fine.
Once again, you could. But you could tell like what's been on my mind more lately has been WLAN Pis. But using it, you could use USB, right? But the Mark III and Mark III S and S Plus all have their controller board actually has a serial port on board and a little slot on the back that you can plug a Pi 0 or 02 into. Pi 0W or W2, really. And then the nice thing about that is like the printer powers the Pi directly.
Yeah.
The Pi is built into the printer. Like you cannot see the Pi. Like it is in the printer. And I think that's about it. I think those are the two advantages, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day. So you decided to go the external Raspberry Pi route. See, I got it right that time.
Yeah, you did.
I decided to go the internal Raspberry Pi 0W connected via serial route.
And
so we did this two different ways.
I think the one of the reasons why I did this was I only have one I only have one Raspberry Pi 02. So I couldn't put the same Pi in all three of the printers. And I did have a couple of 01s around, but there were comments on the forum saying, if you've got a 2, you should use it because of the horsepower. And the 0 will work, but it's not. Anyway, so based on that, I was like, okay, well, I have got Raspberry Pi 4s in the house.
Yeah.
I'll use those. They've got plenty of grunt. There'll be no bottlenecking from the Raspberry Pi with a 4.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk now about the setup process. How was the setup process for you? Did you have any problems? Like what was that experience
like? I didn't know that you could use the USB port. It was not very well documented. So I only knew about this because Robert Boardman told me.
Nice. And thank you, Robert.
And out of the box, the version of Prusa Link that I installed onto the Raspberry Pi 4 didn't communicate to the printer. I had to change two lines in a config file on the Raspberry Pi image flashed with Prusa Link in order to make it talk over the USB port.
Gotcha.
So I now can't remember exactly what it was because it was many, many months ago, but it was on the Prusa forums that I found the secret command that I had to whisper to the WLAN Pi, to the Raspberry Pi, and then it talked to it. And it was frustrating to get it going, but once I understood what I needed to do, then it was pretty seamless. And like they have been rock solid. Interestingly, one of the configuration suggestions is that you don't set a user up on the Raspberry Pi. So okay. I think the idea is that you flash the SD card, you pop it into the Raspberry Pi, and then you do all of your management via Prusa Link or Prusa Connect.
Yeah.
But I want to get into the Raspberry Pi. I want to be able to maybe run another service on the Raspberry Pi, or for example, restart the Prusa Link service myself.
Yeah.
So I flashed an SD card and configured a username so that I can SSH into the Raspberry Pi and look at what else is going on that Raspberry Pi. The only service that I'm interested in is Prusa Link.
Right. You just want to be able to restart that.
Yeah, but I needed to be able to do that because I need to be able to reboot the Raspberry Pi if I want to. Or yeah. But the extra setup was pretty interesting. I mean, it's pretty simple stuff though at the end of the day, isn't it? It's a small
image
computer.
File.
Yeah. It's a small computer just talking over serial to the printer.
Yep, absolutely. So I wish that I could say the setup was seamless for me. I decided to follow their instructions to the letter and do it exactly how they said to do it. So I got the image. I got the Raspberry Pi imager. I think that's what it's called. The imaging application provided.
Sorry to interrupt. Your audio has gone crackly.
Really? I know why. Allow me to unplug my mic. And then I plug my mic back in, and then I make sure. And this is just going to... Is it still crackly?
Still crackly.
Okay, give me just a second here.
Yep.
I've got some things. My webcam's going to die. Oh, man, we could do an entire episode about this. And I think we should just leave this in because this is the reality.
No, we're not editing. There's no editing happening here.
Oh, man. Okay. Can you hear me?
You're back.
At least?
You're back.
But and my video is not. Good. Okay. Yeah, I've had some issues where my mic is going through there's a USB hub connected to my monitor, which itself is a USB hub, and it gets crackly sometimes, and unplugging it and plugging it back in, the USB hub is the only solution. So yeah. Anyway, sorry about that, everybody. Hopefully that wasn't too painful. Where were we? I was telling you about imaging my Prusa Link.
So now your video's up, but it's out of sync.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Okay, let me try going to my FaceTime camera. Let's just see if the FaceTime camera is any different. How's that? Am I in sync at all, or is it out of sync?
No, it's horrible. It's out.
Well, you know, we could just keep going, or I could drop out of StreamYard entirely and come back in. What do you think we should do? Considering that we're going to try to not edit this. Let me just come back. Hang on a second. You entertain people. I'll be right back.
Okay.
Oh, no, but I don't want to do that because if I leave the studio, it won't upload the recording.
It might not do the recording, might it?
All right. Well, I'm going to switch back to my my webcam, and it's still out of sync, but I don't think there's anything we can do about it. So we just have to keep going. So.
Yep. It's fine. So.
Anyway.
Doesn't matter. We'll sort this out for next time.
Half the people are just listening on the podcast anyway. They're thankful that the audio issues are resolved.
That's
so
true. That's right? Totally true.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so back to the Prusa Link stuff. I used the Raspberry Pi Foundation's imaging tool. I wrote the image. I set up my Wi-Fi credentials. I plugged it into the Raspberry Pi. I connected it to my printer. I put the printer back, assuming it was going to work. And the Raspberry Pi just would not show up on my network. No matter what I tried, rebooting or disconnecting power, reconnecting, reflashing, all the things I tried. Would not connect to my network no matter what I tried. So eventually I just did what I always do. And I took the image over to Belina Etcher and used Belina Etcher instead. And then I dropped the WPA_supplicant.conf file in boot with my Wi-Fi credentials in it. And it worked first time after like an hour and a half, 2 hours of troubleshooting. So, and I did it again recently when I updated to the newer image. I tried the Raspberry Pi one again. Did not work. Did not work in the exact same way. But Balina Etcher worked great. So just cautionary tale for anybody out there wanting to try it. So now, should we move into the experience of using Crucial Link? What's it like and all that? Do you want to start?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you about my experience. And that's just that it's so much better than having the SD card moving back and forth. Yeah. I mean, the experience of drawing something in Fusion, and then I now even have the option to export directly from Fusion into Prusa Slicer. And then I can slice and click upload to printer, and it pushes. Maybe you can explain a bit more about what's going on here, because it kind of, I click on upload to printer and it sort of sends the file to the printer and starts printing, but it also sends the file up to the cloud as well, because then that file is manageable through Prusa Connect. I'm not entirely sure about the flow of what's happening between Prusa Slicer on my laptop, Prusa Link on the Raspberry Pi, and Prusa Connect up in the cloud. But
yeah,
talk about that in one moment. The experience of using all of this is really great. And I now have a website which I can look at the status of all three of my printers. I can run some commands. I mean, all of that is cool, but the reality is these printers won't run unattended.
Yeah.
Typically. So yeah. The remote aspect of this is not that exciting, but there's some cool things here, and it removes a significant layer of friction, not having to do everything through the screen and buttons on the printer. I think Prusa Connect and Prusa Link are fantastic.
Cool. Glad to hear you like it. So on the storage thing, I note if you go to, like, let's say that you go to Prusa Connect, which is Prusa's, we have to differentiate between the different pieces of this. First off, there's the printer. Then there's Prusa Link. Prusa Link runs on the Raspberry Pi that's connected to your printer. And then there's Prusa Connect, which is the cloud service that goes along with it. And by the way, I think you can ignore Prusa Connect. If you don't want to use a cloud service for whatever reason, I think you can do that. Yeah. I don't think you have to do it. Like, basically, you just don't, like, when during the setup process for on Prusa Link, you don't generate an API key and take it over to Prusa Cloud or Connect, Prusa Connect or whatever. There's just something you just don't do there, and it's fine. Like, it does not matter. And I think they're being very intentional about that, because there is a certain type of person out there that is very distrusting of cloud services like that and doesn't want anything to do with that. And I understand that. Well, that's fine.
And in its purest form, you don't need it, do you? As soon as you've got that Raspberry Pi onto your local area network, if Prusa Slicer on your laptop can talk to Prusa Link on the Raspberry Pi, and the Raspberry Pi can talk to the printer, there's no necessity for a cloud element.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So it seems like there's two paths that you can use to get G-code over to your printer. You can either go to connect.prusa3d.com and click on your printer and click on storage and upload your G-code to that printer. And that goes up to the cloud and then back down to the printer. Or you can just zip the G-code directly over to the printer, either from Prusa Slicer, or if you generate a G-code, you can go to your printer's IP address, you get a nice little web UI, you can drag and drop the G-code in there, you can hit print right there. So there's really, I guess there's three different ways to do it. Two of them involve local area network, one of them involves the cloud, right? Okay, so on the storage thing, when I go to connect.prusa3d.com and log in and I see my two printers, and I go to storage for either of my printers, I see three tabs. I see Prusa Link G-codes, which I assume is cloud storage. I see Prusa Link G-codes, which is not cloud storage. That is on the Prusa Link device, right? The Raspberry Pi.
That's on the Raspberry Pi.
Yes. As far as I'm assuming based on what I'm seeing in the UI.
Okay.
Then we have the SD card. I can see G-codes there, and I can initiate prints on those, but I cannot add anything to that SD card.
Yeah, there's no way to manage the files on that SD card yet.
Which is a huge bummer to me, and I'll tell you why in a couple minutes. And then there's Prusa Connect, which seems to be the cloud storage side of things, and I'm noticing that it says 3 gigabytes out of 3.0, or 3.0 out of 3.0 gigabytes free. I've used basically none of the storage on that. So it seems like Prusa is giving us a certain amount of cloud storage for free. You just, every user just gets their cloud storage. So I've used both because I'm looking and I see Prusa Link G codes, and then I see SD card, and then I see Prusa Connect, and I have G codes in all three, and I haven't even thought about which one I'm using. Are we good on the storage side? Do we feel like we've talked about how the storage works sufficiently?
Yes, although I would like to jump in. I think there are two things I want to say. Number one, you mentioned we're getting storage space for free. I think it's also important to say there's no ongoing fee. That, like, all of this, Prusa Link, Prusa Connect, and Prusa Slicer, all free. So there is no payment component to any of this currently. But to be honest, I almost think Prusa Connect and Prusa Link, like, they have value. I probably would pay. Yeah. I'd be happy to pay a small
me too
value per month for this service. But I will continue sponsoring Prusa by purchasing more things from them.
Yeah.
And the other thing to say, though, in my workflow, I slice things on my laptop, I send them to the printer. But I'm pretty sure then that's right. And then the file stays on the Raspberry Pi.
Yes.
But you get visibility to those G codes through Prusa Connect. So that's the web UI, which you could view from anywhere. But I think there is limited value. The value is less in the remote control thing. I have set prints going remotely, and it has gone wrong.
Yeah.
So,
things go wrong.
I had the blob.
Like it didn't adhere to the print bed because you weren't there watching it.
It was the first time I'd printed that slice, you know? It wasn't a tried and tested anyway.
Yeah. Okay, so we established Prusa Slicer as the slicing tool. Prusa Link as the application or the Linux distribution that runs on the Raspberry Pi. Prusa Connect as the cloud service.
When you say the Linux distribution, I guess it's worth saying it is pretty much Raspberry Pi OS.
With
a service.
It's Debian.
I mean, it's pretty vanilla, but it just comes pre-installed with the Prusa Link service that's set to go automatically.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So we've got those three components there. And then on the printer, we've got the three storage methods, storing it on the Raspberry Pi itself, storing it on the SD card, storing it up in the cloud. We've got those three different components. This is where I have run into a little bit of pain with Prusa Link.
Okay.
I'm sorry to say that it hasn't been all like perfect for me. So, and actually in our discussion here, I've realized why it might not be perfect. So I have had three separate prints now that I have been using Prusa Link in one way or another, three separate prints where several hours into the print, I have come up to inspect the printer and see how things are going and found the print head stopped in the middle of the print, just sitting there. Heat is on. It's just chilling out. Maybe the heat was turned off, but either way, the print stalled, stopped, and failed. And was unrecoverable.
Okay.
Yep. But I think I know why. So as I'm looking through my three storage types, Prusa Link G codes, SD card, and Prusa Connect, I'm not using the SD card for these prints because you cannot put things on the SD card through Prusa Link. You can't. Yep. I understand that there's probably some severe limitations around serial transfer. Maybe the firmware on the controller board doesn't support it. There's some reason why that doesn't work. I only have one G code on Prusa Link sitting on the Raspberry Pi. I have 15 or 20 G codes sitting on the cloud. I think what's been happening is I have been uploading my, unknowingly really, dragging and dropping my G codes onto Prusa Connect, putting them up in the cloud. Then if it's streaming that G code down from the cloud, at some point the internet connection hits a hiccup for some reason. That's another thing I need to talk about. And the print stops because the G code is no longer available. So just as a cautionary tale, I think I am going to tentatively recommend not storing your G codes and printing to them from Prusa Connect, from their cloud service. I'm going to recommend making sure that you're putting them on the Raspberry Pi itself and printing from that, not the cloud.
But so I don't think I've only tried this once, and that was the time it failed, but yeah. Not due to a pause. But it seems wild that it can't stream from the, PushaLink must download the file and then
print. I would hope so. I would really hope so, but I don't know. Now,
yeah, but the evidence interesting is thing. You had print stop.
Yeah, but on those prints, was I using PrusaLink G-code? Was I storing it on PrusaLink, or was I storing it on PrusaConnect, the cloud service? Which one was I storing it on? Additionally, there is a button on PrusaConnect on the cloud list here that says copy to PrusaLink G-codes. I'm going to click it right now and see what happens. And now if I go over to PrusaLink G-codes, it's not included there either now. So maybe after a refresh. So I don't know. More research is needed. So I think from here on out, I'm going to be very intentional about not printing from PrusaConnect and being sure that I'm uploading my G-codes directly to PrusaLink and printing from that and seeing how it goes. So I'm not writing it off yet and saying it sucks and that it doesn't work or anything like that.
But it's still a beta, isn't it? Like
it's still in beta.
At no point has Prusa turned around and said, no, this is fully baked and ready to go. But
correct. I have an update. The G code that was on PrusaConnect that I set hit download to PrusaLink, it just showed up on PrusaLink. So
Okay. There it is.
So from here on out, and maybe in the next episode, I can give an update. I'm going to be printing exclusively from PrusaLink, not from PrusaConnect. But yes, back to what you were saying. PrusaLink is very much not intended to be used for production right now. It just simply is not. In fact, if we go to their GitHub and take a look at releases, their last release was 0.7.0 release candidate 2 on December 9th of 2022. It's now mid-March. So this is not production ready. So, obviously we're finding bugs. Maybe we're going to find some issues. There is no complaining about this. It is not production ready.
No. We're certainly not throwing any shade. I'm over the moon that I can do what I can do, and it's working great.
Same. I mean, for what it is, for the versioning that they're assigning to it, this is working phenomenally well, and I've had a couple failures, but not a big deal. Can I move on to my second issue that I've run into now?
Yes, please do.
PrusaLink? Okay, because there is a second issue, unfortunately. So recently...
Yes, I know where this is going.
Yeah, recently in RC2... recently in December, they released RC2 and it added support for onboard cameras. Like you can plug a USB camera into it or a Raspberry Pi camera over the camera port. Yep. And now you get a camera in PrusaLink. The fact that they're supporting USB cameras, I greatly appreciate because I didn't feel like they had to do that. I feel like they could have just said Raspberry Pi camera or GTFO. They didn't. We get both. Remembering that I am using Raspberry Pi 0W1s, not 2s. I have 1, 2. I've just, you have to solder pins to it, and I've been reluctant to take the plunge and, you know, solder pins to it and whack it into my 3D printer and then try to desolder the pins.
And from that's my saying something because you are not shy of soldering.
Yeah. I just feel like when you start soldering on a Raspberry Pi, it's now very dedicated to whatever you soldered onto it to do.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So they were pretty reliable, pretty dang reliable until I updated to this version that supports the cameras. And I have a couple of USB webcams plugged into them. So it's actually a very clean installation. It's a little camera that hangs off of the motor for the Y axis, the side to side, if I remember correctly, or is that the X axis? I can't remember. The side to sidey motor, the motor that goes side to sidey, not forward, backy.
I'm pretty sure that's X.
Yeah. I think it's X. And then the cable runs into the electronics enclosure, and I actually cut it off and soldered a little OTG connector on the end of it to plug it directly into the Raspberry Pi Zero. It looks factory. It looks like it was. Wow. It came on the printer like that. It's very clean. And it points at the print from the side, and you get a nice close-up of the print nozzle. It looks really, really good. So there are those little USB cameras. My upper printer and my stack of printers has been totally reliable, no problems, it always works. I did back the resolution down from 720p to something lower, I forget, but I'm not running full resolution on that. Printer B, on the other hand, it regularly drops off the network. It just disappears and does not wake up and does not come back. And it only started doing that when I added the camera. So my theory is that that Raspberry Pi Zero W, for whatever reason, it is less fault tolerant than the upper one, and it is more prone to dropping off the network. I have seen this happen with completely different Raspberry Pi projects before, that when you overload a Raspberry Pi Zero W, it disassociates from the network or stops being responsive on the network, stops interacting with the access point in every way. I have seen this before. I think that's what's going on here, but the fact that the upper printer is fine, the lower printer is having issues, they're exactly the same hardware, that is confusing to me. But at the end of the day, again, it is beta software, maybe even alpha. You could call it alpha software, probably. And I am asking a Pi Zero W to do what nobody thinks you should do with it, which is do printer controls and run a camera at the same time. So this is all on me.
You didn't go to where I thought you were going to go to about the dropouts. And the how does the printer let you know that?
That. Yes, there is, and this has been recognized by Prusa, but there is a bug in the, not a bug, but just a poorly implemented feature on the
in this beta
control board for the printer.
We're not allowed to complain about, but
yeah. But it's a poor implementation. It's actually on the firmware on the printer itself, where if it loses connection with the cloud, the printer goes beep, beep, beep three times at 1 a.m. or 1:30 a.m. or 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. It doesn't matter when it is. It just it does that. So like literally in the like at 3 in the morning, two or three weeks ago, I actually had to come upstairs in the dark and turn the printer off because
there is a solution. So if you go onto the Prusa printer through the
set it to silent
through
mode.
The dial, you can set it silent mode, which is an acceptable workaround.
Yes,
but I no surprise I set you know I asked that printer to do change filament and I walk away. I go back later. Heating disabled due to timeout.
Yep.
Which,
you know, then you have to like let it heat back up really quick and swap. You know, it's not like the end of the world when that happens, but it's also not ideal. So
but that's only on RC2, isn't it? So my three printers, two of them are running RC like 0.7 RC1, I think.
Yeah.
And the top one's running RC2. And it's only the top one that has beep on loss of connection and won't.
Okay.
I can't disable it. The RC, it may not be RC1. It may be 0.6. I don't know. I should probably log in and find out. But nevertheless, I have got the lower two printers beeping normally, and they don't beep if the Pi drops for a moment.
Okay, so maybe they have fixed that. I should probably turn everything back on.
But it's the other way around. It's the other way around. Like it was fixed in the older version. It didn't happen in the older version, but it does happen in RC2.
Okay. All right. Well, I think my printers are just going to stay on silent for now. And that's fine. It's fine.
It's worth having the camera. I would currently rather have the camera, the USB camera, and have to run the printer in silent than not have the camera.
Yeah, because for me, the camera is like when I need to start a print and then run out of the house, I can look and see, did it stick? Does everything look good?
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, cool, it's stuck. That's like the big thing is, did the print stick or not? So, yeah. So, you know, there's definitely some bugs for Prusa to iron out. I really should be upgrading mine to 02Ws or 02s. That's just how it is. I should do that. I think part of my issues are because of that. You know, it could be that part of why my prints are stopping halfway through is because not only am I printing off of the cloud and it's streaming the G-code down from the cloud, but my Pis are overwhelmed trying to run the camera and the print.
You know
and
what?
Falling off
I think it's that. I'm not saying that you're wrong here, because I also, I'm just talking out the back of my head and I don't really know what I'm talking about, but I do not think that this is related to G-code streaming from the web to the Pi. That doesn't make any sense. I feel confident that it's what you just said. It's the
underpowered Pis.
The Pi having a kernel panic, or just running out of, like, mismanaging system memory, or something's happening where it reaches a point where it cannot proceed. Yeah. That's why it just stops in the middle. Because it's not even a graceful failure, is it? It doesn't like back away from the model.
No, it just stops. Yeah. And like I mentioned earlier, I have a couple of Raspberry Pis, Pi Zero Ws, that, like, one in particular. There's another Raspberry Pi project I'm sort of involved in called a Pi SCSI. It's like a virtual SCSI device for old Macintoshes and old samplers and things like that. And I have this one build that this one Raspberry Pi Zero W, like, if I can use it all day long. But the moment that I ask it to do anything network intensive, it dies, just instantly dies, and will not come back until I power cycle it. It's just that piece of hardware. I'm starting to think that there might be a hardware flaw with some of the Zero Ws that manifests itself in the thing falls off the network, or kernel panics, or something. I don't have visibility into it to know what's going on, because it's a headless box and I can't connect video to it.
Sure.
So I think really getting another 002W is going to be the way to do it. I mean, they're $10. I need to just do it.
Well,
so,
but can you buy them?
I don't know. I haven't tried in a long time. I do have one.
I think they are, like the Raspberry Pi 4s, extremely difficult to locate.
That's annoying. Ah.
Well, had that not been the case, I might have given embedding 02Ws into my printers more consideration, because of the clean aesthetic and keeping them all tidy inside the case, the 3D printed housing for the control board. But it was the case back in October 2022, and I'm pretty sure it's still the case now. You can't buy them.
Pi Shop doesn't have them. Adafruit doesn't have them. Canakit doesn't have them. And that might be part of too why it's been 3 months since we have seen an update from Prusa on the beta software, because maybe they're like, we're not going to prioritize this right now because there is no hardware for this, which that is reasonable. That's very reasonable.
So you might actually want to buy a WLAN Pi to drive your 3D printer, because then you would have a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
I just for the fun of it, I did have a WLAN Pi driving one of the printers for a period of time. So the WLAN Pi, the WLAN Pi M4 is the carrier board. So it's a CM4 sat on a carrier board. And that way, because I only had two. Oh, in fact, you know what? I've got a Raspberry Pi 4, a Raspberry Pi 3, and a CM4 driving my three printers.
Oh, you're all over the place.
I'm all over
just
the place.
Random hardware. Yeah. I have a 486 running, what's like a really old Linux distribution? Slackware. I have a 486 running Slackware running one of my printers. I have an old Sun box in here, like a Sun rack mount server running one of my printers. No, not really. But yeah. Well, I am excited about the whole thing. I am enjoying it, despite the little issues I've run into. But I think, I think I'm going to change how I'm uploading my G codes to my printers and make sure they're on the Pi itself. See if that does any better. Maybe try to get to the bottom of why that one Pi keeps falling off the network. You know, really, I know it's probably a hardware limitation at the end of the day, but it could be something else. It could be my camera is set to too high of a resolution or something like that. So, yeah,
fair enough. Would you like to? There's one more topic on the Prusa theme that I think would make sense to discuss now. Are you up for that, or do you want to? Leave it?
I've got about 10 minutes before I need to run. But if we can knock it out in 10 minutes, let's do it.
Well, this touches on something that you experimented with a while ago, which was you. On the Prusa Mini, we you liked, and I also liked the startup G code where it would the purge procedure.
Yeah. Where, so when you start a print, where it would heat the nozzle to 170, which is not print temperature. That's below print temperature. Heat the bed up to the expected temperature, whether that's 60 for PLA or 85 Celsius for PETG. Then do the leveling, then park the print head, and then bring the print head from 170 up to 215 or 220 or whatever. Is that what we're talking about here?
That's right. Yeah. And you rewrote the pre-G code for the Mark III to mimic that behavior.
Yes. I mean, I basically went and looked at the start G code for the Mini and why Prusa hasn't made that standard for the Mark IIIs, I don't understand. I did one small change though, is instead of hovering the nozzle a couple centimeters above the print bed while it's heating up, I actually park it just about on the bed.
Okay.
And then it just starts moving to make the purge line. So it's a very small change, but really the same thing. Yeah, I integrated that into my own custom profile in Prusa Slicer. I mean, it's just copying and pasting a few lines into the start G code box. Game changer. Are you doing that too now?
Yes. So I did the same. I did more or less the same thing, but I've also rewritten the purge line as well. So yeah, much the same. Now when I hit print on my Mark IIIs, the heat bed comes up to I can't remember the numbers now, but the heat bed comes up to a temperature. Yeah.
Yep.
And then the nozzle comes up to say 150. Then I go and probe the bed.
Yep.
Then I go and park the nozzle a good four centimeters off of the bed, so that if there was any gunk in there,
blob,
I could easily get it without kind of like trying to scoop it out. But then it then starts purging from that point. So it's 4 centimeters in the air, and the extruder motor starts going once everything's ready at temperature. And then I just slowly come back down to the bed. So that way any loop just gets kind of coiled on the loosely gets coiled on the heat bed in that no print area. It then touches the print bed, carries on, and I extended the purge line an extra 3 centimeters, I think. So I guess I'm wasting more material, but in the grand scheme of things,
whatever.
My purge is now much longer, and it squirts a bit more out in free air. And I found that now I don't ever need to touch the nozzle. I might brush it occasionally just to make it look clean, and that just makes me happy. But I think I could set most prints going now without having to touch the nozzle at all.
Yeah, with my start G code, the way that I'm doing it, I'm in the same boat. It sounds like we're accomplishing the same goal in two slightly different ways. But I mean, I'm not touching the print anymore. Like, I am peeling up the old print off the bed, getting rid of the old purge line, and hitting and wiping it with alcohol and hitting print. That's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's pretty great. So yeah, why Prusa hasn't made that standard on the Mark IIIs profiles in Prusa Slicer? They don't even have to update Prusa Slicer to do this. This is just a profile thing. I don't understand why they haven't done that, but yeah, whatever. They probably have a good reason, or they don't want to pull the rug out from under people or something like that.
Yeah.
So
whatever the reason. It's fine. And also, it was a really good experience for me learning, trying to pick through the G code commands and figure out what each. Of course, you run the risk of driving the nozzle into your print bed, but I didn't.
Yeah.
So it's okay.
Well, you just understand what the code is before you edit it. And by the way, going back to kind of bring this full circle to when I talked about the olden days of 3D printing, back with my scratch built original printer bot that I built back in the day, and several of my subsequent printer bots after that, you had to manually enter G codes into a prompt. Like, you basically got a little prompt where you could type in a G code and hit enter, and it would send it to the printer instantly. That's how you changed filament. Like, oh, you wanted to unload your previous filament. You had to type in, you know, G35 E 58 and it would de-extrude it by 58 millimeters or something. Yeah, that's how we did it. Yes. And so I had, you know, I had a bunch of G codes memorized and I could say, you know how it is. It's just a command line.
Yeah.
And yeah, you'd sit there and rattle off a couple G codes to, and if you want to do filament changes, like a couple times, like I went into the G code, right into the file and pasted in a filament change in there. And that's how we did filament changes. And if it didn't work the first time, like if it didn't eject properly, like your print was hosed because there's no restarting it. You had to start from scratch. And and we also, back then, we had to walk uphill in the snow both ways to get to our 3D printer. So
it sounds rough, man.
It was rough. It was rough. You kids these days with your menus and your Raspberry Pis and, yeah, your Prusa Links, you don't know what it was like. But no, it was fun. It was really fun. And I'm very thankful for how far things have come. I'm so thankful to have LCD screens and, you know, wheels where I can interact with it and menus and stuff. It's so nice.
All of this, though, all of this touches on what you said to me when I was just starting, which was you're jumping in the party just around the time when the printer is starting to become a product that can produce prints, and it's no longer you'll spend 90% of the time tinkering with the printer. You can now spend 10% of the time tinkering with the printer.
Absolutely. When I bought a used Mark IIs off of somebody, Prusa Mark IIs from someone, and that printer was about a year and a half old. He was upgrading to the Mark III, so that's why he sold it to me. And that was the first time that 3D printing was the hobby, not playing with the 3D printer was the hobby. Like I could focus on printing stuff. And then the Mark III and subsequent Mark IIIs just pushed that even further. And even today, like I'm sure you've seen, like there's the new Carbon X1 printer, which how Lenovo isn't suing them immediately for that, I don't understand. But, you know, like, oh, you guys have a laptop series called the Carbon X1? Well, we're going to do a printer called the Carbon X1. Okay, the Bamboo Labs. Yeah. Bamboo Labs Carbon X1.
Yep.
Even though that printer looks like it is extremely advanced and looks very much like a microwave oven, like Thomas Sandlatter on YouTube, I'm sure you're familiar with him. Mm-hmm. He published a video saying, like, here's why I still use the Mark IIIs.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, it's old. It's got an 8-bit microprocessor on board. It's got a monochrome 50 character LCD screen. Yeah. Like, this thing is kind of old by today's standards, but this is still the printer that I reach for when I want.
Solid.
It's solid. And really, the issues that you and I are having with Prusa Link are self-inflicted. Again, beta. Like, you know, the printer, when you just stick stuff on an SD card and plug in the SD card and hit print, it prints every time. It just works.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Unless there's maybe an adhesion problem, but that's like the one thing that can really go wrong these days. So, all right, Nick, what do you think? Anything else?
That's it.
I think we're good.
No. That's it, man. That was great. Thank you. I really, because I desperately wanted to talk to you about that since WLPC 2022. So that one has been sat here on my chest, just
nice,
waiting to talk to you about it.
Nice.
I think, yeah, this was great. Thank you ever so much for your time. We'll catch up on the next one.
All right. Sounds good. Talk to you soon. Bye now.
Thanks, man. Bye.